This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week we are featuring a guest who I was hoping to talk to during Magic Live in Las Vegas a couple of months ago, and he was just so busy I never got a chance to chat with him, and we promised to get together, and so we finally did here today for this podcast. I'm talking about Yigal Masika. Now, he is the guy who has been selling loops, the invisible thread loops, and has branded the name, The Loops. He actually bought the idea from Finn John, and he goes into detail in talking about that here on the podcast today. But beyond that, he talks about his creative process and how he focuses on trying to come up with new ideas all the time on how to utilize these loops and different ideas that you can do with them, and how to use them as loops or in this special reel that he has made up that's a spider pen, and then the newest thing is going to be his tarantula. I hope that this doesn't sound like a commercial for the things that Yigal is selling, and that's not my intent at all. I thought that it was interesting just to learn more about loops and how they came about, etc. Certainly, it seemed to be quite interesting to the attendees at Magic Live, because for each of his four sessions, they had just standing room only. It was completely packed. He had a lot of really great ideas. And so some of the things he shares on the podcast here today were some of the things he had talked about in that lecture. So if you missed that, or even if you heard it and you'd like to hear some of the things again, he discusses that. Towards the end of this podcast, he talks about Penguin Magic, and he is towards the end of a lawsuit that was filed about a year ago, I guess, and so they are going to be going into mediation here tomorrow, actually, as we are posting this podcast here on Thursday, the 13th of October. He said they're going to be sitting down for mediation with Penguin on Friday the 14th, and hopefully things will be resolved. If not, I guess then they go to court. So he talks a little bit about that towards the end of this podcast here as well. Kind of topical and quite interesting, I think. Also, that he gave us some loops to give out to the listeners. For those of you who had attended Magic Live, everyone got to receive a free set of his loops, and if you didn't get that, you didn't get it to attend, or you want to get another set because yours are broken, be sure to enter the contest. We'll talk about that at the end of the podcast here. Also, we'll announce the winners from the most recent contest, which was the one offering the cards necessary for the anniversary waltz that were given to us by Garrett Thomas. And he was the one who was featured in the last two podcasts for the last 2 weeks. Well, enough for me, and now it's time to listen to the solid words about invisible loops. See what I did there? From Yigal Masika here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and during the Magic Live convention in Las Vegas recently during the summer, one of the speakers was Yigal Masika, and he had standing room only audiences for all of his shows, and there was a reason for that. I was introducing him for one of the shows and one of his speeches, and it was really good, had a lot of really good stuff, and so I thought it'd be best. I couldn't get together with him because every time I saw him, he was at the booth, and he was just selling out of everything that he had, and so we couldn't really get together. So I've got him as my guest then right now, all the way from Los Angeles, actually, right now. Hello, Yigal.
Hi, Scott. How's it going?
I'm doing very well, thank you, very well, and so it's good to hear you, and you've just flown in, actually, from Israel, is that right?
Yeah. Just got back like 2 days ago, 16 hours flight, and just like, you know, got cold and almost recovered, so I'm good. Thank you.
Well, you're sounding good, so that sounds like you've been taking care of yourself and gotten some sleep and some liquids and everything, so that sounds great. Well, listen, I wanted to talk with you just about being the guy who It works with invisible thread and loops and all of this about some ideas that you had shared during your speech, because not everybody could attend the Magic Live convention because there just wasn't enough room. And so they were not only enough room for the convention, but even to hear your lecture, as I said, they were standing room only over there. So I thought we might talk about some of the things that you had discussed in there. But going to the loops then themselves and the invisible thread that you had developed, how far back did you, I mean, how did you get started with using invisible thread versus, I don't know, using cards or coins and doing magic instead of going this direction?
Mm-hmm. Well, I started doing magic when I was 10 years old. And when I was about 17 or actually 15, around 14 or 15, I seen one of the videos of Finn John doing a floating pill and floating bubble. And he explained how to do that, but he explained it with invisible thread. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't see much of the handling. So also I didn't have the loops with me because it's a video that I got from a friend. And I realized that this is very fascinating and it's created a sense of wonder in me. And that's, I think, when I got very inspired.
Did you actually start making your own loops then?
At that time, I went to my friend, and he had one pack that his father bought from FISM, mm-hmm. and they had only one loop left, and I said, very careful, please touch it very slowly, and when I just touched it, it just went out of the pack, the kind of the card that's holding it, and I felt like really bad, because no any loop left, and I didn't experience what it is like.
Right.
And, I felt like it wouldn't be great if I had, you know, many loops to play with and come up with ideas. And a week later, I found like stacking, you know, stacking like of my mom. And I took the thread out and I played with it and I find a way to tie a loop mm-hmm. and or invisible elastic band. And at that time, I played with it. And a week later, I came to my friend with five loops and I showed it to him and he couldn't believe it. And then I showed it to friends, and they couldn't believe how I can make, like, so tiny knot. And that's how I got started, and one idea sparked another, and here we are.
Boy, that's one of the things I think is most difficult, certainly, is learning how to tie the knot. First of all, finding the right material. You mentioned, like, a silk stocking, but I've heard, you know, use of Kevlar or other kinds of some threads, and you can strip it and, you know, just use the thread. But sometimes it's just – you want it to be fine enough, obviously, that it's invisible, but it also has to be easy enough for you to try to tie or be able to see to tie. So I think that that's a real trick on learning how to tie it.
Yes, it is, because it's like you need to have the right strength and the right size and also the right invisibility. So with the time, I felt like I'm very comfortable with my product, and it just, you know, evolved with time to be better and better and suitable for all those effects that I do, like kind of the hunted pack and moving silverware and it's not like just floating a light object like a business card, but floating and moving heavier objects.
Yeah, so you have to have a heavier type of invisible thread, but not so heavy that it's detectable or visible.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's still invisible, pretty invisible, but at the same time, you have the right durability and the right elasticity. So, right. But ultimately, you want the invisibility, because if it's not invisible, then you just give the magic away.
That's right. And it is a really strong thing for something to actually physically move, whether, like in your case, you have some eyeglasses or a pen or a silverware or something like that move, that it's phenomenal. I recall that Mike Amara was doing a borrowed bill. It was a floating bill routine that he'd done or was trying to do on The Tonight Show. I guess Johnny Carson had seen him do this so many years ago and it had invited him on to do it. And he started to get the rig set up and the thread broke, and so it's like,
ouch.
What else have you got, you know? You don't have a backup, and that's one of the things that you talked about, as I recall, in the lecture, where that you do have a backup. It's important to have that.
Oh, definitely. With I feel like any tool of invisible thread work, you should have a backup, mm-hmm. kind of a plan B. If one breaks, and you have the second one right there for you, it's give you more confidence, and if something happened, you're just ready to go. And since it's invisible, nobody can see what you do. And with your misdirection and skills, you can make it look like nothing happens. Nobody will know that they just snap on you. And it's always better to be safe than sorry.
Boy, that's for sure. Yeah. So do you wear two or three loops? I mean, one or two on each wrist or something all the time?
I have like two on my right wrist. One is like very close to my palming, to my palm. Mm-hmm. And the second one slightly up or maybe on my sleeve. And when I need it, it's right there for me.
Now, you wear them every day, I assume?
For the last 25 years, I wear it every single day. One loop or two loops. And I feel blessed, you know, to go anytime, anywhere, and just create something amazing and create a sense of wonder for people. So it's one of my favorite tools to have.
Yeah, I used to wear mine and would take it off then at night, and sometimes I would forget, leave it on at night, take a shower the next morning, and it's like, wait a minute, it's still there. Sometimes it'd be there, sometimes it wouldn't, but I would wear mine for a long time then too. And when you're doing something on an impromptu basis, is there something that you do regularly? I mean, do you always float a business card, for an example, or is there like a go-to trick that you do on an impromptu basis that you recommend?
Mm-hmm. I usually like to do something that suits the situation. Let's say if I will be on a bar and someone will ask me for a napkin for a second, and I want to, you know, show him something cool, then I will say, let me show something cool with this napkin. Would you please open your hand? And then I will float it, and I will suit the situation that it just happened like out of the blue. Like if someone will ask me for a business card or someone holding a pen in his hand, I may grab it and do something with it instead of just being very forced. Because if you do something that's very forced, like kind of pulling the deck out of your cards out of nowhere, and it just seems like you, it's not that amazing because it seems like you plan to do that.
Yes.
So with loops, it's always there for you, and you can use daily objects, and you can do amazing things. It just seems like out of the blue. It seems like it's not, it seems like organic.
Right. Well, I think that is the best type of magic, certainly, in which that rather than you going up and starting to do magic for somebody or mentalism or reading a mind or whatever, that it's not until that the situation presents itself that you can show that you have this ability or if someone asks you. In other words, that it's rather than producing a ham sandwich, if someone is hungry and said, man, I sure, could sure use a ham sandwich, and then you make one appear, much more magical.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's something that we can tell their friends about later on, and it just the magic become more powerful and more amazing. That it seems like it just happened. Like you have these magical powers that you can go anytime, anywhere,
right,
and just do this.
Now, what you say, different situations also. What about in those lighting situations? You were talking about that in your lecture in Vegas. How do you adjust the lighting, or what kind of lighting do you look for or try to avoid?
Mm-hmm. With loops, most of the time you will be fine because it's very up close to your body, and use your body as a background. And if you have like a very diffuse shirt, let's say, and you float a bill or you move an object, most likely they will not see the thread even be very close. But one rule to keep in mind, I call it the 5 feet rule. Mm-hmm. You want to be 5 feet away from the light. Now, there is two kind of lights. There is a fluorescent and there is a clear light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
A clear light bulb is something you should stay away with. You should stay away from. Why? Because it's reflective. The light is not diffused. The fluorescent, the light is diffused. It's kind of a white color. It's not like a sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with a fluorescent, you're totally fine. With a clear light, the glare of the light, the reflection of the light may bounce on the thread, and then we can see the reflection of the thread. So you want to be like 5 feet away from the light. Usually when I enter a room, I look up, and if the light is right above me, I may step 5 feet forward or 5 feet back, and then I will stretch the loop for a second and see if it's reflective or not. If it's not reflecting, then I know that I can float an object, I can move an object, I can be fine.
Right.
Now, if you do a stage show or you do a close-up show, you can ask a friend, hey, Scott, what do you feel? Can you see the thread from this distance? Can you see it from this angle? And then you can find what's the sweet spot, and then you can do the magic, and it just seems like more real because nobody... I think most importantly, you don't have to look like you fear that they see something, because if you start to act that way, your body language starts to give away that you're using invisible thread work. You want to look like, you want to, in your mindset, you want to forget about the thread and believe that you have these magical powers. You're almost like a miracle maker, mm-hmm. and you go anytime, anywhere, and entertain and amaze people in a very unforgettable way.
Right. That kind of reminds me, I guess you certainly wouldn't, as you start to get into it, look up at the lighting and kind of make a judgment. Should I back up or move forward, or is the lighting okay? Because when you do that, people are going to say, why is he looking up? The same thing, I believe, whenever you're doing a card trick, for an example. If you look over your shoulder or you kind of look around to make sure the angles are correct, people are going to say, why is he, you know, what's he looking for, or what is he looking at? Is there something there that, you know, in other words, you're drawing attention to it. So that's something that you almost have to have peripheral vision, and you kind of imagine who's looking or where they are. So you sense the room. Same thing, I think, with the lighting situation. You have to, before you start into it, kind of know where that lighting is and get into position before you get ready.
Definitely. In order also to avoid looking up while people, let's say, talking to you, you can stretch slightly the loop and look at that. If it's not reflective, you don't have to check the light. Mm-hmm. But if it is reflective, then you should know that you have to watch out.
Right. That makes sense. So the 5 foot rule then, Yigal, that sounds fairly specific. How did you determine 5 feet versus 10 feet or 6 feet or whatever?
Well, I woke up one day in the morning and I went to the bathroom and the door, got in, and I looked at the mirror and I realized that I have a wrinkle on the forehead, and I said, oh wow, this is a big wrinkle. And then when I wake back up like 5 feet, I realized that I don't see that wrinkle on the forehead. And I was like, what's going on? Sometimes I can see a wrinkle or not. And what is it that makes the difference? So I realized that the light was above me, above the head.
Oh.
And when I stepped back, I couldn't see that line on my forehead. And when I stepped forward, I seen it. So I realized that this is the right amount of distance that I need to have from the invisible thread.
So you just look in the mirror, and as you kind of move back and forth, that you can see the shadow of the wrinkles in your forehead, basically.
Yes, huh. And that's when I got that discovery, and I realized that that's something that I have to have in mind, like a mental note, that 5 feet will be about the right amount of time.
Right.
But sometimes it can be even 2 or 3 feet when the light is correct. And I can do it like right under the nose of people, floating something or move something. And I don't need to say that there is no threads, because they see that there is no threads.
Sure.
And they're just more amazed. It's about how you control the situation by having more people around you and using more of your body as a background. And some of the ideas of those ideas are in my DVD.
That's a very good point. I think a lot of times people, you know, you don't need to say there are no threads. People might suspect that. I don't think it's important that you say, hey, I'm not using a trick deck of cards or whatever else either. I think you just get into it and you perform it and you do it, you know, basically. And I think audience management is almost more important in thread work than it is with card work or other types of close-up magic. Certainly you have to watch your angles and everything with close-up magic, but with this, you don't want people bumping into the thread or putting their hand or trying to reach prematurely. So I think audience management is a real important thing here.
Definitely.
And in developing this as well, you said that Finn John was a not necessarily a mentor, but someone who had inspired you to kind of work with that. And then I understand John Kennedy had some input later.
Yes, John Kennedy has some input. I will get into him soon. But before that, I want to give a credit to Finn John that he was very kind to sell me the rights to sell loops. And when I bought the rights, I was 21 years old. I just got out of the military service that, you know, you're obligated to do in Israel, like 3 years. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I didn't have much money because I just got out of the military. And I got to sell my car and get the money that I got from the military and get the loan for my mom. And everything together was like about $10K. Mm-hmm. And I bought the rights from Finn John for $10K. And that was exclusive rights. And my mom felt that this is too much money and I made a mistake. And I felt very confident about it and very passionate about it. And I realized that, you know, if I have only the ethical rights from Finn John, that would put me on the right, you know, direction.
Right.
And it's the right things to do. So I'm glad I did it. And it shows and paid.
Right, and never look back. Sounds like that was the correct decision after all, certainly. And when you purchased the rights for that, was it also the type of material that he used, as well as the method that he used to tie it, as well as the name Loops as a brand?
At that time, I seen him calling it Invisible Elastic
Bands.
Loops. It wasn't only the name Loops, and he didn't give me any thread or any ways of tying it or anything. I just bought it only for the ethical rights, and I just got his signature. That's it. I didn't get anything else besides the signature. Later on, I asked him if I can write the trademark on my name, and he was fine with that, and I really appreciate it.
Right. So you found the right material to use, basically.
Yes, I found my own material, which was very strong and very invisible. And I felt like, oh, this is different. And I showed it to his, how you can say that, manager. And he sold me the rights. And after he sold me the rights, we went to lunch and I showed him some effects. And he was blown away and he couldn't believe that that's what I can do with that. And he felt like, oh, maybe he did a mistake. And we laughed about it, and yeah, it's I think it's a great quality thread, and the price actually went down, and magician's been very happy with it till today.
Have you used different kinds of thread with different tensions? In other words, there are some threads perhaps that are still invisible that you would use under one condition versus another, or are they all still the same thread?
It's the thread elasticity and visibility and durability are the best I found, and it lasts for a very long time. Now loops come with 8 loops in a pack. It used to come with 5, but now come with 8, and that lasts you up to a month. And what can I say? You know, you go to Starbucks these days, you buy 2 coffees, that's $10.
Yeah.
So one set of loops will last you for a month, and you know that you can do so many different things with that, and it's so practical, so fun.
Right. Now you were talking also about the lighting condition. My concern would be of what color loop to use, whether it's going to be black or clear or blue or whatever. Have you decided that one is better than another, or do you have different colored loops?
I tried many different colors with time, and I realized that black works best for me. I tried in the past blue, and I tried gray, I tried red, and black was the best because it just diminished the reflections, and it's dark, and when you stretch it, it's becoming more invisible, and I felt like that's the most suitable way of doing it, because when it's on your hand, you see it slightly. I tried gray, wasn't that good because I couldn't see it on my hand well, so I didn't know when it's there and when it's not.
Yeah, you don't want it to be invisible to you. I mean, you want to be invisible to others.
When you stretch a gray color or a white color on a black, you can see it right away. Or on different colors, you can see it very reflecting.
Right.
So at some point, I wanted to do blue, but I realized this is I found a blue thread with the right source and everything that I needed. But I realized it's not as good as the black.
I had heard someone say once before about how that they would color part of it. In other words, that they would stretch out an invisible thread and they might take a magic marker and color in like 6 inches and then skip 6 inches, color in another 6 inches. So that way it's kind of, you know, white and black so that it would reflect differently depending upon the lighting situation and your background. Have you tried that, heard that, or anything?
I tried that kind of zebra method in the past, but didn't work well for me because I realized that you may not see one part, but you see another part. So it's like kind of counterproductive in a way.
Yeah, that makes sense, certainly.
So
once you developed and found the thread that you like and then started making the loops and everything, I know you developed a spider pin because I bought one of those several years ago, I think, one of the first models of that, which came out when, 2000 what?
2004, 2003.
Okay, which I thought was phenomenal. A friend of mine, Jamie Salinas, here in town, we were at a convention. He said, you need to go get one of those right now. So I went over. It was really nice. Had the little watch battery thing, and so it had a mechanism in there. So this way that it activated a little motor. It wasn't like the ITR, the invisible thread reel. I'd had the invisible thread reel. In fact, I remember John Schirach had a really clever idea of putting an ITR into a beeper. And no one wears beepers anymore. But at the time, I thought that was kind of it made sense, you know, to have the thing there. And he would, you know, use that as his hookup, basically. The ITRs are so difficult to use, and if the thread breaks and you have to suck that thing back and pull it back out and redo it, I mean, it is horrible, hard to work with.
I have the same experience. When I was younger, I used it, and I felt like it's a nice device because nothing else was out there. But then with time, I realized when the thread breaks, it's like 3 hours just to fix it. And I felt like how I wish this has been more practical and the thread was more invisible, and it has some flaws, and I stopped using it, you know, after a while. And I felt like, but this is one of the tools that I like, so I wanted to use it. And then I realized that I met John Kennedy, and he has a reel, and we exchange ideas and secrets. And he showed me these motorized reels that he has. One motorized reel. It was very small, but it has a fishing line. And you could pull only maybe 5 feet of thread, even like 3 or 4 feet. And I felt like this is great. And I played with it. And I just, you know what I mean? Recall that I had this idea to do a visible thread reel, but didn't know like how and what would be best way of doing it. So I was like, wouldn't it be great if that would be a motorized reel under your shirt, and find a way to incorporate John Kennedy idea with my idea and the ITR and do something like new. So I played with it. I changed the motor. I put the invisible thread. I played with it more and more and more and realized that it's doable. So I contact John Kennedy and I said, John, I have this great idea. I want to give it to you as a present or as a gift, and I hope you like it. So I explained the idea. And John says he thought about it in the past. He's not interested in doing it. And if I feel it's good, then I should go and I should do it. Yeah. And then I said, John, I think this is really workable. And he felt like it's too difficult and not good for him. And once he's done with one idea, he just move on and doesn't want to marry to the same idea. And I felt like, okay, if he doesn't want to do it, then I will go and do it. So I worked on that, and then 6 months later, I have the final product, and then I showed it to John, sent him like one or two for a gift, and he gave me a great testimonial that raising the bar of invisible thread work, and that was an honor to hear that from John. And since then, you know, I just got into invisible thread work more and more.
Right, more specialized in that, and continued to develop that. So you've had several versions of the spider pen and everything since then, and now have the tarantula pen. Is that right? Or can you tell me more about the
Yeah, I have not recently, actually. I came up with the Spider Pen Pro, which is a better version of the original. The original was like, I tried to make the smallest motorized reel, and I realized like it looks like a cap of a pen. Yeah. And then I said, how can I make it like how can I make it like something that we use daily, that doesn't look like alien object, something that looks like, you know what I mean, like real.
Not a foreign object, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I said, oh, this is look like a cap. Let's put a clip of a cap. And then the other side was the pen, like a springy pen, and it just looked like a real pen.
Right.
And it just looked like very innocent. You can put it on a table. People will use it as a real pen and wouldn't know that this is a motorized reel. So that's how I got the first pen. The second pen, I realized that there's room for improvement on the first one, because the first one had a watch battery inside. And that watch battery lasts you for maybe 10, 15 shows, and then it will dry down and the thread will be weak.
Right. That's the one that I had, was with the watch battery, and I felt like that I could only use that for a while, and then I was going to have to put in a new battery, because you certainly don't want to be left when it doesn't work and it doesn't retract because the battery is weak. It's kind of like, again, if you're going to be doing a show and you've got a microphone, you need to make sure you have a good, fresh microphone every show. You don't want that to go out.
Absolutely. So the idea of the new reel of the pen, the construction of the pen, first it builds out of metal and looks nice at pen, and then we realized if we put a AAA battery inside, my team and me, if the AAA battery will be inside, that will last you for 365 shows.
Wow, that's
which
a great
is a full year.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to deal with any rubber bands and different complication things to replace the spool.
Right.
So it's just a battery. You put a battery and you're ready to go.
Wow.
And that was like 365 shows. It's like amazing. And the consistent of the tension you know, the even tension, no matter how far you go, you can walk up 25 feet, like 35 feet now, and you can float an object or move an object and do so many different things, and you always have the same even tension on the thread. And mm-hmm. a lot of people using it and love it because the thread doesn't break easy. Even if you walk on the thread, it wouldn't break easy because it always dispends so easy from the border.
I like the way that you can walk away from that. Certainly, again, going back to Magic Live and in your presentation when you were using that, and you had, as I recall, had a bill on the floor or something, and you walk away quite far, and you had the hookup, I guess, on the person, and he didn't know that. And you were like 10 or 15 feet apart, and it starts to float, and then you kind of can walk towards it. So, yeah, it was very, very clever. It's a great thing you can do with that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I think the idea was there that taking my phone and ask someone to videotape me.
Oh, that
but
was
when I give him the phone, yeah. I have the anchor point of the wax into the phone.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know that he's becoming like instant stooge or instant assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So when he hold the phone and doing the video, I can back up as far as I want and I can float and animate while he's videotaped me. But now he's the anchor point. So a lot of magicians appreciate that because it seems like so innocent and so natural that
right.
it doesn't seem like it's forced. So
do you use their own camera? Or I've forgotten. Was it the volunteer's camera or your camera?
I use my own camera because usually there is a crowd and I will ask someone, hey, would you mind to videotape this because I want to upload it to YouTube
uh-huh.
or something. And they will know this is a, you know, decent question. And pretty much now I'm hooked. So a lot of people appreciate that in Magic Live. They felt that this is very different.
That was. That was pretty darn cool. Now, the tarantula is different in an upgrade again, or how does that differ from a spider pen?
The tarantula, it's a utility that you have in your hand, and it's becoming like almost like an extension of your hand. You can animate and float and do amazing things while everything is under your command. And it's pretty much another gimmick that divided by – I cut another gimmick in half,
mm-hmm.
and you have invisible motorized reel in your hands under your command. And it's pretty cool device, and you can do amazing effects with it. And I feel like it's a great backup for the spider pen, or if you use pick attaches,
right.
you always can use that. And it's cool. You can come up with your own ideas as well. It's really cool.
Right. So the tarantula sounds like a pretty cool idea in using a sonata gimmick, but how did you kind of move from the spider pen to the tarantula? How did you develop that? I mean, as far as creativity, I'm always curious about how people come up with different ideas and what inspires them. So how did you come up with the idea for the tarantula?
When I had the spider pen, I realized some people may not like to go with the pen. And I said, you know, I feel like the invisible thread work as a room for more improvement, and I try to get the invisible thread reel to be as invisible as possible. So I said, how about if we put it inside a thumb tip? And then I work on something very small inside a thumb tip, but I felt that it's not that invisible, because when I do my magic, people are around me all the time,
mm-hmm.
and I was afraid that they see the thumb tip. So I said, how can we make that more invisible? How can we take that to the next level? And then I realized if I use another gimmick, that was slightly bulky, so I cut it in half, worked on a motorized reel, put it inside that finger shell, and that's how it started to evolve. And then it's becoming so cool and so easy to use, and it's like right under your nose, but you don't see it.
Right. And this is your newest one? You have another one that's coming out, or have you got something else in progress?
Yes. In the last 7 years, I've been working on a new tarantula, and it's pretty much, I feel like, the best motorized reel ever. It's just really easy to manage.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have a rechargeable battery, so you don't have to buy any more small batteries. And it just all the features there are much better than the original. And I feel like very, very proud of this product. It took years to develop it, but the quality and the product now, I feel like, speak for itself. And if you bought the first one and you're happy, you're going to be super happy about the new one.
And this is going to be coming out before Christmas? Or Hanukkah?
Hopefully the promotion will start at that time.
Yeah, Well, going to the creativity of that, I think I want to find out again kind of how you come up with the different ideas. I look at somebody, let's say like Sean Farquhar. I remember hearing a lecture of his one time in which that he was showing some tricks with these poker chips. And he said, here's what you can do with the poker chips. And here's another idea. And here's another idea. And there's, I mean, it would seem to be endless. And then he would finally move on to the next thing. And then he would have several things he would done with that. And so when he's selling a product in the back of the room after the lecture, it's not just a trick and the prop, but it is a prop with several ideas, which are all good and commercial ideas, because the idea being is, well, if you can do this particular, if you don't like this routine, here's another routine. You might like that. And if you don't like that one, here's another routine, because there's going to be something that might hit somebody, I guess, on that. The point being is that he doesn't seem to stop thinking about an idea. So I think Gregory Wilson is probably a lot like that as well, which that he just kind of, you know, looks at something. Well, what can I do with it? What more can I do with it? And just keeps turning it from a different direction and looking at it. So it seems that your focus has been on Invisible Thread. And I assume that you keep focused on that. Like you said, it's taken you 7 years to develop this new reel that you've got with a new tarantula. So how do you spend your time, or how do you focus, or how do you think of these ideas in the middle of the night, or does one thing lead to another? Or do you, how do you, what's your process?
I don't have a specific process, but every inventor I feel like has a different inspiration. I feel like the basic is we are like a problem solver. Mm-hmm. Like with the ITR, it's Invisible Thread Reel. And I decided, you know, to just take it to the next level and said, you know, how can we make this better? How can we make this different? How can we make the effects that we can do slightly different or completely different? So we start with the basic ideas, and then usually it's something that I like or something that I appreciate, because I have a great background doing shows when I was younger and into a product development almost all my life, like 30 years. And I see sometimes things in a different way, and I realize like it's almost like taking a regular phone and just turn it to iPhone. Mm-hmm. It's still a phone, but it's a different phone. It's a phone that never been done before.
Right. You're just not taking a box and painting a blue box red and saying it's something new. You're taking an idea and going completely different direction.
Yes. Sometimes you see the idea and it seems like very simple, but on every simple idea, there is a very complicated process that's going to the taking to develop that product. It's so many elements, and a product is a composite of so many different features that everything has to be so solid and so cohesive that then it speaks for itself. And with me, I feel like I found very interesting when you come up with an idea that is very versatile, that magician can do different things, and it's not like one pony trick.
Right.
And when you give them that ability, they really appreciate it, because they can come up with their own ideas, their own presentation, and it's everybody choose and pick what suits his personality. And that's what I like about Invisible Thread Work. You can walk to a room like for half an hour and just do a show with so many different things, and it's the most practical and more easy things to use, and the impact that you're creating is like just like big, you know?
Right.
So creative process is not like, I don't have a formula that they're working with, but it's always start with something that they may like, and I feel like it's there's a room for innovation or a room to be a game changer. Mm-hmm. And then I will get into the process, and sometimes it works, and sometimes you spend like 2-3 years down the road and you realize, you know what, I took the wrong path, and I'm not going to put that out, because if I put that out, that will not be good for my name, not be good for the magic community. And why waste more time on something that's not working?
Right, right. I understand. Well, it sounds like that you have a real passion for those who are creators and for making sure that you're going to buy from someone who actually is the originator rather than the ripoff and the piracy that's going on that seems to be rampant. Because as I was going to your website, which is yigalmasika.com, for those of you who want to go to this, because there's a point in there, I think in your about section or something, in which you had a paragraph or so that you were talking about your passion of making sure that you do purchase from originators.
Yes, I always believe, you know, the art of magic has been around for thousands of years. And we always give the proper credit. And this is a very small niche. And in that small niche, there is another niche that's called Invisible Thread Work. And I'm here for creating the impact and supporting, you know, the magician who admire and appreciate my work. And I'm not here just to make more money, but ultimately I'm here to help a magician to create, you know, the best magic effects possible, and pretty much to share the magic with people who appreciate it. And not like just to, if I wanted to make more money, I can sell my stuff to the public and create every Monday and Friday another magic trick. And that's not my sense of direction. My sense of direction and my vision is about to create the product that people appreciate and people have, you'd get good benefits out of it. And it's really spread around. And if it's not that good, why waste my time and my energy to do something that it just kind of, you know what I mean, like mediocre.
Sure. And I'm sure that you would agree that it's important to fight for your rights to make sure that people do recognize that you are the creator, and that way that your brand is not used by someone and you're not being recognized or compensated for it.
Yeah, definitely. I think most of the magicians are very appreciative and very how can I explain it? Be very supportive. Mm-hmm. And they know how to share the credit. And I live 5 minutes away from the Magic Castle, and I know how people are very, very appreciated when they learn new ideas or they get new tips. And it's just a good field to be in, because people are always, you know, supporting each other. But there is few percentage of the market that I feel like they're like almost like evil corporation, that you have a good idea and they will try to come out and take it or try to have a small spin on it, even though it will be bad. They will try to get more money, but not care for the creativity and not care for the time that they took to develop that that product. And it just kind of sometimes a shame to deal with that kind of few percentage of the market that don't care about the art of magic and the brotherhood of magic, and they're just there to make the right marketing and to make the money and just move on to the next copycat idea.
Right. Well, I know that you are involved with a lawsuit right now. Would you mind talking about that a little bit, where you're trying to protect your own property?
Recently I found that Penguin selling a knockoff of my item. They call the product as real as it gets. But then I contact the representative, Tim Toronto, and I said, you know, this seems like it's coming with one set of loops. I was wondering if it's that the original loops or just generic invisible elastic bands. And he says that it's definitely coming with the original and I have nothing to worry about. And when I ordered the product right before Christmas, to my surprise, it was, you know, imitation of my loops. And I felt like this is really shame that, you know, a company that's supporting and selling my products will see the impact that my product creating and the demand, and then will try to imitate the product in a very poor way. The quality was very bad. And they had Losander speaking about loops using my trademark. And I believe that a lot of people misled to believe that this is just, you know, the authentic item, which is not. So I contacted them and I explained that this is not right and I'm not happy with this. And they said, well, we just tried to help you to sell more loops. And we thought if we're giving a second alternative, like it's cheap, we can move a lot of those DVDs and then you sell more. And first, I wasn't involved. Second, I talked to Losander, which is a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And he says that they told him clearly that they're going to use genuine loops. And this is what will help me with my sales. And he's going to talk about it as loops. So when he used my own trademark, he called them loops. And when he found out that that's what they did, he was very shocked as well. And 2 months down the road, I kept talking to them and sent letter from the lawyers. They decided to stop and asked me to stop sending letter from the lawyer. And I said, great, okay, send the original and it's all good. Then a few months down the road, I asked my friend from overseas to buy another set. And then he was really pissed because it was fake. And he sent me a picture and it was again the same BS that they're dealing with, I have to deal with in the beginning. And I contacted this company and I said, you know, this is not right. And if you're not stopping now, I'm doing a lawsuit against you. And they got the lawsuit, and they've been very surprised, which they shouldn't be surprised. And what can I say? I mean, I'm there to protect my rights.
Right, of course. Now, a couple of questions, I guess, as far as the Loops or the name, the Loops. You talked earlier about how that you had purchased the Loops and the Invisible Bands, basically, from Finn John. But the name Loops, is that a copyrighted, trademarked name that you have?
Yeah, it's a trademark under my name. I got the approval by Finn John that I can buy the trademark, and it's my exclusive trademark.
Yeah.
And Penguin selling my Loops on their website for the last 12 years or so, and it's really not fair that in the past they did also a marketing saying, you know, why waste your money buying Loops while you can tie them yourself? And then they do false advertising by giving some machine or some special tool to tie them, which is not workable. And the thread is very weak. And then they're speaking, it's almost like me telling you, you can make your own Coca-Cola. Let me sell you the powder that make Coca-Cola. But that's not the same trademark. That's not the same formula. That's not the same secret. In one of the products that Penguin have on their website, it's called Million Dollar Nut. They claim that you can tie your own invisible elastic bands. In the past, they claimed that you can tie your own Loops and stop wasting your money buying Loops. And pretty much, you know, I feel it's a false advertising because, one, they don't know what kind of thread I'm using. They don't know what kind of quality I'm using. The thread not even come close to the research and development that I did for so many years. And I feel like it's a shame that they're misleading to people to believe that you can tie your own Loops in very effective way while people complaining that it's not easy to tie those invisible elastic bands or Loops. The point is, I feel they're taking advantage of the consumer to believe that this is part of my work because they put my name into that copywriting explanation. And on top of that, which is more a shame and upsetting, but using my own effects that I created for many years, I've been published those Hunted Pack, Animated Fork, and maybe one more animated object. And I feel like it's really, really bad that they tried to initiate my name with something that I didn't create it, taking my own effects, putting it on a video, making the magician feel that the magician should be thankful for them for showing them such a nice effect while it's not related to their work.
So is this actually some sort of a gimmick or some sort of a thing that allows you to tie the knot? Or is it just a video teaching you how to tie it using your fingers?
In the past, we saw some lame machine that allow you to tie those invisible elastic bands Loops. And I believe this didn't work for anybody. I believe it didn't work for anybody, so they stopped selling that. Now they're saying you don't need that tool. You can just wrap it around your wrist and just tying it, which I feel like it's really not effective as well. The bottom line is a magician can go and buy it and give it a try and see how bad this product is. But the main point of this conversation about that topic is that it's not fair to take same effects that have been created for so many years and been features on David Blaine show and in my booklet and in my product line and just to go and do a video and not give a credit and to delusion people that I'm part of that. It's not right.
Are they associating your name with that product though?
Be saying that it's been created and popularized by me, but when they do the effects, they don't show and they don't say that I'm the one who created it. They're pretty much doing the sale based on my creativity and based on my ideas. But I don't get any percentage out of that. I don't get enough credit for that. And I feel like the product is so bad that I don't want them to sell it because the magician who experienced a bad taste out of a product may not buy it again, may not use invisible thread work anymore.
So you really don't even want any proceeds from that because that's not something that you would endorse.
Yeah.
Right.
I seen one article by one interview with Lance Burton, and he says that copying someone's ideas is as bad as you come to his house and steal his TV and walk out. And I feel like it's kind of that bad.
Yeah, I remember so many years ago of being in a comedy club when Mack King used to tour long before he ever went to Las Vegas. And there was someone sitting in the front row at the comedy club with a pen and paper, and they were writing something down. And he noticed that and said, "What do you think you're doing?" And the guy kind of was startled, as if he was surprised. And he said, "You're stealing my babies."
Wow.
And that's essentially the point. I mean, that's how important these things are.
Yes, it is. It is. Definitely. When people make a profit or living out of that, then you just come out and you publish those things, and kind of, I feel like arming the art of magic, it's just bad.
Right.
Yeah, and I feel like this is really arming the magician in the end of the day, and it's not the right things to do. And I told him, please take my name out of that. This is not part of my product. Don't take advantage of my reputation. Get off my shoulders and stop doing that. I found them at least five times, you know, doing similar things. I developed this tarantula, a motorized wheel, and then 2 years down the road or a year down the road, they flow the ring the same as I do with a guy by name Magic Ballet, and did a DVD, and I sent him another letter from the lawyer and saying, you know, you can't do the same things. This is not fair. This is not right. This is not ethical. And then after back and forth email, like a month later, they took it out and saying, oh, we didn't make much money out of that. Well, you took it out because it's not ethical, or you took it out because it didn't make much money?
Yeah, I understand. Well, my second question was just about with working with Lusander was they were selling generic loops. So am I correct in saying that you did not receive any compensation then from the sales of that?
No, I got zero compensation. And I felt like, you know, this is not fair. I feel like, you know, I was surprised that they're doing things like that, but it's happened a couple of times. So I kind of got off of the shock, and then I realized, you know what? I'm going to protect my rights like the big companies protect their rights. You know, when you copy a big company, they're not going to play with you all day long and waste the time of the day. They're just going to take a lawsuit. And if you don't understand that way, then they're going after you all the time.
Right. I understand. So you decided to file a lawsuit. And so how long has that been going on, and how soon might that be resolved?
It's been going on for about a year. And by this Friday, we have a mediation. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this will be resolved. And if it doesn't, then we'll take it all the way to the court, and I will be there to stand for my rights. And I feel like I'm kind of old-fashioned because I'm having, you know, tremendous amount of time to develop something, and I feel like really insulted when someone tried to steal it and not give the proper credit and try to make money on my behalf. And I feel it's not right, and I will be there all the way till people in the magic community will know the result or the right justice, you know?
Right. Now, this is not the first time that you have filed a lawsuit against someone because trying to protect your rights. So I recall that you had a suit against Sean Begonia some years ago because of something that he had developed that was close to yours.
Yeah, Sean years ago developed something that was similar to mine. I contacted him and I explained, Sean, this is not fair, and this is exactly the same as my idea, and I feel this is not the right things to do. And then he didn't agree with me, and I showed him the patent. He says, you know, if you have a patent, as you claim, then I will stop. And then he sent back email saying, no, I'm not going to stop. I don't care what you have. So I sent him the patent. He realized that it's the same, but he didn't want to stop. Make long, long story short, in the end, it's resolved in court. But looking back in time and doing research on Magic Cafe, the lawsuit was in 2007. But in 2004, we found him bought a spider pen from Hocus Pocus and rave about it on the Magic Cafe with his own picture. And he says this is the best tool he ever bought, and he loved the concept and loved the functionality and speak very highly about the product. And I felt, you know, this is he got the right inspiration, but maybe forgot that, you know, this is something that you got out of my work, but what can I say? You know, in the end of the day, stop doing it. But I feel like, you know, it's not the right things to do just to step on toes of other creators. And it's not fair.
Well, it's one of the things, of course, you have to do to protect a patent, that if you have a patent, I don't know that everybody understands this, but it's important that you, first of all, write a letter of cease and desist. And if that doesn't work, then you do have to defend it in court. Otherwise, that the patent is no good. So it, you do need to follow up, and it sounds like you have done the right thing.
Yeah, by law, I should protect my rights. And if I don't protect my rights for a certain amount of time, then I can lose my trademark or my copywriting or patent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're putting so much time to develop something, and you put your soul and energy and all the time of the day, sometimes working 16 hours a day, and then someone just come over and just take the idea and slap a different graphic design and call it another product.
Right.
It's just really not right.
Right. Well, it sounds like that this is all going to be resolved one way or the other within the next few days. Sounds like then, too. So I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us on how this all developed and leading us up to where we are here today. It sounds like it's fairly current. But to conclude, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So my question, Yigal, then to you is, what is it that's important to you? What is it that's your magic word or phrase? What do you live by?
Well, I started doing magic since I was 10 years old, and this is my true passion. And I really believe that you should follow your passion, and you should do what you love to do. Mm-hmm. And if you have an idea or you have something that you love to do, you should give it a try and let the correction follow. And just, you know, believe in your passion, believe in what you do, and just go with it and see where it takes you.
That's great. Yeah. Follow your passion. That's good. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you being a guest here this week on the Magic Word Podcast. Here you go.
Thank you, Scott. Great talking to you.
It's my pleasure, certainly. And I know that the listeners have enjoyed this as well. And so until next time, that was Yigal Masika, and this is Scotty out. Well, that got real interesting real fast, or should I say that got real fast. Kind of interesting. I certainly appreciate Yigal Masika coming on this week and being our guest and taking the time that he did to kind of give his side of this lawsuit. And I certainly hope everything gets resolved amicably to both parties' satisfaction sooner than later, because both Yigal and Penguin are important forces in our magic community. So now let's take time to review a couple products from Murphy's Magic Supplies. First up, I'd like to talk about Creativity Boost. This is by Brian Watson and the Magical Empowerment series, apparently part of a series of different CDs having to do with hypnosis, and is quite unusual. Let me just first of all say that I agree wholeheartedly with the premise that Brian starts out with, and that is that we all have the ability to be creative. It's just that we don't seem to exercise that muscle. It's a muscle that needs to be exercised just like anything else, and the more you exercise, the better you're going to be at it. And what I like that he says also is how that basically comparing your mind to a computer. Basically, people don't have a bad memory, they just have a bad recall. And also, as far as a computer, that your mind is kind of like a motherboard or a hard drive, and the monitor is what you remember or what you recall and what you say. So it's a matter of trying to reach down and to access those memories that are in the hard drive or on the motherboard. Now, the way to do that is perhaps through sleep, and the best way to access that through sleep is not just while you are in your REM sleep, but also when you're completely at ease and relaxed and in a hypnotic trance, if you will. And I wouldn't say really the trance like where you're going to cluck like a chicken or anything, just the contrary. It's where you're completely and totally relaxed, and you allow yourself then to access the inner parts of your mind and to open it up and let it flow and to be creative, basically. So the CD has five different tracks. The first four talk about creativity and what the CD is for and how to use this. And then the fifth track is the one which actually you should be listening to on a regular basis. What he recommends is to listen to this for 28 consecutive days, and you should set aside some time each day, whenever it's going to be, morning, noon, night, at some point where that you can actually have some time where the phone's not going to ring, you won't be harassed or have any outside influences that will take your time away from trying to focus and concentrate and relax. So the majority of the fifth track is really to put you into a relaxed and a slumber state, or a hypnotic state, if you will, in which that you can access these memories. And then the last 5 or 10 minutes or so is basically the time that it allows you to go in and access this. But the majority of this is really just to kind of put you in a relaxed state. I haven't taken the 28 days to do this yet and listen to it, but what he does recommend is not to listen to this when your focus could be divided to something else, again, the phone ringing or whatever happened. And most importantly, certainly one wouldn't want to try it when you're operating heavy machinery or driving in traffic, which is what I did. I just threw caution to the wind whenever I first popped this into the CD player of my car. It was my car still has a CD player. I was listening to this during rush hour, and I got the idea of what he was doing as far as trying to put you to sleep, and I was trying to focus on the traffic and dividing my attention to what he was saying, and I got the idea of what he was doing and how the hypnosis works. And I'm certain that whenever that I would get home that I could listen to this in a quiet atmosphere, and indeed it does work. It really relaxes you, and so I would recommend that, again, you listen to it as he suggests. So again, this is something that certainly would work. And as I said, all of us are creative in our own way. And I believe that this would be one way of accessing that creativity that is within all of us. Again, it's called Creativity Boost by Brian Watson. And I would recommend this. Having not tried it for the 28 days, I can see how this thing would work. So I would recommend this without much hesitancy. Next up for review is Indigo by Beautiful Mind Magic. This effect is basically a prediction effect in which you have a card that is lying face down on the table before you begin, and it is divided into four quadrants, one saying partner, magician, lady, and gentleman. And four cards are selected, and then they have the choice of changing cards, switching them around with you or anyone else at the table, leaving them all face down. And then when you turn the prediction over, that it shows that it matches exactly. So where it would say the magician or my partner will get, the magician will get, the lady will get, the gentleman will get. And there are little boxes there, and inside the box would be the card that they had selected. Pretty cool little effect in which that there it says in the description that there are no stooges, no switching, and there is no writing, 100% self-working, and it's examinable. Let me say that yes to all of those, except that if you want them to do some examination, then there will have to be a switch, because what you're supplied with is a gimmick. And also an online video which shows the presentation and the subtleties necessary in order to make sure that everybody ends up that matches the prediction that you're going to make, as well as the another video on how to make this little gimmick. You're supplied with everything really that you need, and it is a pretty cool little gimmick card that looks like just what it's supposed to be, just a card with writing on it. But again, for you to allow them to take a look at it and make sure that there are no sliding panels or gimmicks or anything in the card, you need to make a switch, because, well, there are sliding panels and gimmicks in this card. But it's pretty much undetectable from a close distance. It defies inspection from a relatively close angle. It's just they can't pick it up and fiddle with it. One of the things that could be a problem is that if you carry it in your wallet or your pocket or someplace where it might get bent, then you might have some problems with the mechanism that it won't slide as easily. But he tells you about how to get around that. So it's best that a little tip is to make sure that you always carry this between a couple of pieces of cardboard or something, so this way it's going to be protected. And you don't want there to be a lot of humidity where it might hang up then also. But there are a lot of little things to fiddle around with and to use to make this thing. Again, the videos that are online are very descriptive, and you can understand exactly how to make the thing. It's not something that you could make on your own. You really need to have this gimmick. It's extremely well made. Each one is handmade, which is why that it's fairly costly at a retail price of $29.95. But it is a pretty cool mentalism effect. And let me just say, it doesn't have to just be used with playing cards either. It could have to do with anything that you can write in that window, whether it's going to be denominations of bills, or say $1, $5, $10, $20, whatever. Or if you want to write numbers in there, if you want to draw pictures, pretty much limited by your imagination is what they said. But really, it's limited by what you can put in each of those windows. And there are a variety of things that can certainly fit in there. So this is a pretty cool little effect. It is kind of gimmicky. It's recommended for the intermediate. It's something that is just an additional thing that you have to carry around. I think it's a pretty good trick. It's something that I wouldn't highly recommend. I'd say it's okay. There are other kinds of things you can do that are pretty strong. This indeed is very strong because, again, you allow people to select four different items. They can switch them around, change their minds, and it still matches your predictions. So I think it's worth looking at and picking up. It's a pretty cool little trick. It's called Indigo by Beautiful Mind Magic. Both of these items reviewed today, as well as the other things that are in the Magic Store here on themagicwordpodcast.com, are available through Murphy's Magic Supplies. You can always get these things from your favorite magic dealer, but we hope by now, since you are listening to this podcast, that you consider the Magic Word as being one of those favorite magic dealers, where you can purchase anything that is supplied from Murphy's Magic Supply through our magic store. If you don't see it, just let me know and I can get it to you. It's also another way that you can support the Magic Word podcast through your purchases rather than just your financial donations, which are always appreciated, and that will allow you to become a friend of the Magic Word. But by purchasing something through the Magic Store, then we can use the profits from the sales to offset some of our production costs associated with each episode of the Magic Word podcast. Well, we've kept you in suspense long enough, and so let's go to the leaderboard. Let's now announce the winners from the recent contest for the Anniversary Waltz cards that were donated by Garrett Thomas. And the three winners whose names were randomly drawn are Tony Baranio, Rob Peffer, and Sean Rivera. Congratulations, guys. These decks of cards will be going out to you shortly. And speaking of prizes, I mentioned earlier in the podcast that Yigal Masika was going to offer five sets of the loops that he was offering at the Magic Live convention. And if you will just go to themagicwordpodcast.com and scroll towards the bottom, you'll see where you can sign up and register to win. So what I'll do, just as I did with these decks of cards, just have a randomly generated name, actually five names, that will be drawn, and we'll contact you. And if you reside in the U.S. or its territories, then shipping is free. If you're outside the U.S., then I'll contact you, and then you can let me know if you're willing to pay for whatever that the foreign shipping is going to be to get this to your country. And that is going to be pretty much a wrap, I think, for this week. We've had a pretty full episode with a lot of stuff being discussed here, and I hope that you've enjoyed the topicalness of it all, if that's a word, and all the other tips and suggestions and history that Yigal had shared with us here this week. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and follow your passion. This is Scotty out.